Welcome to the Reformist Pipeline, your dose of empowerment and the pipeline to inform your decisions on how you can support change in our education system. This is Lindsay, affectionately known as Miss Black.
And I'm Hobby. Mr. Broussard, if you're feeling... I didn't pre-plan this one, but I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good.
I like good.
Shout out to all the graduates. Yes. I know that this is like a very interesting time because you're not going to be able to walk the stage, but I don't want that. I don't want the Rona to really take away from your momentous accomplishment.
Absolutely.
I actually was talking to a candidate today via Zoom, and I was letting her know. I was like, yo, you're dope. You're amazing. And she was talking about how she was a first-generation college student. She was just talking about how she really was enjoying the vibe that she was getting between the both of us. And I was like, yes, like, you're amazing. And I was just like, you're such a great person. And so, like, congratulations on graduating. So say all that to say congrats, grads, to all the 2020 grads. Shout out to y'all.
Yeah, shout out to all of them. Somebody, I think it was Sydney, that sent me something on Instagram, and there was like a principal or somebody who was an admin in some city that I can't remember, so all this is not super helpful, but still exciting. They went around and created, like, you know, like those signs that you put into in the yard.
Yes.
Right. They made one for each, like, graduate. Yes. Yep. Like, everyone, like, had their little graduation picture on it, you know, say congratulations. And I was like, that is so sweet because
it really is.
That is, like, very creative, like, innovative and intentional. I mean, granted, like, obviously those materials are always available, but it's, like, innovative to be able to find a new way to use those materials and, like, really just congratulate people because my heart goes out to them.
For real, though. Yeah. And I really do think that people don't truly understand what it means to, like, walk across that stage, because I'll be honest, I feel like that was probably, like, one of the first times that I got extremely emotional just to know, like, what it feels like to be a first-generation college student for, like, your parents to have busted and done so much to, like, make sure that you got to where you are. Mm-hmm. And for, like, that's all that they wanted to see is, like, me walk across that stage. So, like, I did it for my bachelor's and that meant the world. And so the fact that I don't get to do it for my master's this time, it's unfortunate. But so, like, I really do want to tell everybody, like, that experience, even though this was taken away, find another way to value that. And just like Lindsay was saying, like, I think that we were talking earlier about the way that people are being creative, like, find a way to make this occasion meaningful to you. Mm-hmm. Don't let the fact that you don't get to walk across that stage take anything from this moment, because this moment means so much. It means the world and so much more.
Dang, you really supposed to graduate this week.
Yeah.
You have, like, strategically not been talking about it, and I'm like,
Yeah, that was this week.
Yeah, because I remember us planning to go to Broccoli City Fest.
Yeah,
and you were like, yeah, I'm gonna buy my parents the tickets. We gonna go right after. Oh, we're not going to commencement. We're not worried about that. You know, we just gonna have a graduation. Yeah, life flipped upside down.
But it's all right. Broccoli City Fest. Mm-hmm. That is supposed to be this weekend too.
Speaking of teachers.
Let's not dwell.
Transition.
Yeah.
Speaking of teachers, by the time y'all listen to this episode, it'll have been Teacher Appreciation Week.
Yes, shout out all the teachers.
Shout out to all the teachers.
Starting with Miss Black.
Woo! Starting with me, baby. But seriously, though, shout out to all the teachers. I really hope that everybody listening, I feel like everybody knows a teacher at this point. You know,
absolutely,
somebody's a teacher, or, like, maybe you could reach out to your teachers. You know, I'm not going to go in too deep about what you can do to show your appreciation, because I want to make sure you guys are tuned in to that call to action at the end, because we're going to give you some details about it. But just a huge shout out to all the teachers that are listening. You're the best.
For real, though.
You're doing the work.
The work. Okay.
Okay.
And also, I know we're talking about Happy Teacher Appreciation Week, but also Happy Mother's Day. By the time that this episode drops, it'll be the day after. So shout out to all the mothers. Shout out to all the mothers who are also educators, the mothers who are also nurses, mm-hmm, the mothers who are also doctors, the mothers who are also all types of first responders, folks who are shopping in grocery stores right now, like, mm-hmm, providing for their families in so many different ways. I had a call with, I was really on the phone today. I was working.
You were.
I had a call with a colleague.
Weird.
And her child was there and she kept apologizing to me. But I was
don't
like,
apologize for that.
No, like your child is being your child. Like
it's
that's
so
is okay.
Normal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I was trying to normalize it because I think that oftentimes, like in nonprofit world, corporate world, people try to normalize the fact that we're in a global pandemic. And I'm like, no, like the fact that your child is at home, it's okay. Like mm-hmm. everyone's child is at home.
Right.
And if they're not, like they are very privileged and they have the opportunity to have like childcare and things that come to you. But
yes.
You ain't got that and it's okay. It's totally fine.
You
like
we knew you had a kid.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And that's the reason why
so
you're
okay.
You. And I love it. So mm-hmm. shout out to all the mothers that are out there that are really trying to be the educator, or not trying, but that are the educators in the household right now.
Yeah.
That literally are cooking, doing all types of things mm-hmm. and being even more of the superheroes that y'all are and the cape wearing that cape.
Speaking of superhero too, I actually listened and watched a YouTube ad. I know we usually skip them, but it was very, very moving because it was like in dedication to mothers and it was like your kids now aren't going to remember, like they'll remember the pandemic, but they're not going to like remember the pandemic and not going to school and all that. They're really going to remember all of the efforts that you as a mother put in to make it seem normal, to make it seem regular. So if you have your kids on a schedule, shout out to you. That stuff is really hard. If you're cooking dinner and you usually cook dinner, it's different now.
Exactly.
It's totally different now.
Yep.
And you should, I really hope that your kids are showing appreciation or that you feel appreciated in some way because moms are really doing a lot of work. So happy belated Mother's Day.
Yes, happy belated Mother's Day.
Now we are transitioning into our segments. The first segment we will begin with is terminology time. The term of the day is learning styles and modalities. Learning styles or modalities are derived from Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences. The term learning style speaks to the understanding that every student learns differently. Technically, an individual's learning style really refers to the preferential way in which the student absorbs, processes, comprehends, and retains information. Now, I think that this one is one of the more common terms that educators use. I think like lots of muggles or non-educators know mm-hmm. some learning styles. So I'm just going to like review some of the real like basic ones that a lot of people know. So an auditory learner, someone who learns through listening and speaking in situations such as like lectures or group discussions, and they might use like repetition as a means to study. Visual learners, also very common. They prefer the use of visuals, maps, and graphic organizers to access and understand new information. And then one of the other super really common ones, like all three of them, kinesthetic learners. Now, the kinesthetic learners typically have excellent physical memory, and these students learn through carrying out physical activities. So now, you know those are pretty familiar. Now, I'm going to give you an example of how a teacher would actually have an activity in a classroom that appeals to all of those learners. So let's say you're in a third grade class. One of the standards for third grade is to basically commit to memory the single digit multiplication facts. So actually, I think it's 0 through 10. So 10 is not single digit, but you know what I mean. So a teacher may want to just review the threes. Like, can you count by your threes? So the teacher will decide to put on a YouTube video, you know, a nice little song where they're rapping or remixing a song so kids can learn how to skip count by threes mm-hmm. and they can multiply by threes. So that appeals to the auditory learner because it's literally a song. They're hearing the content through music. They're hearing it through their ears, and they're able to process that information. This same video could also appeal to the visual learners because through that video, there's visuals that are on the screen. Maybe you're seeing groups of threes go across the screen. Maybe there's a story that's being told with the threes. And so now they can commit the skip counting by threes to memory. Or a kinesthetic learner. I mean, they're also going to be have appeal to this type of learning because they can get up and jump the counts of threes. They can get up and dance and hear it. And then because they're able to move around, actually commit that stuff to memory. So those are some of the very, very traditional learning styles and also an example of how teachers appeal to those learning styles with just one activity. But I also wanted to just throw in just two more learning styles, because there's a lot, right? Oh. You could Google some of them, but I also want to talk about some that I feel like appeal to me. So read and write is a learning style, very similar to linguistic learning. So these people learn through words. So they may be avid note takers or they're avid readers, but essentially these people are able to translate abstract concepts into words or essays. So I was an avid note taker. Well, I am an avid note taker. Do I look back at the notes? Not really, but a lot of what I write is committed to memory. Social or an interpersonal learner. That is also me, if you know me personally, or maybe you can feel my energy through the podcast. So interpersonal learners love to interact and prefer learning through interpersonal communication and interaction. So these learners are true, like, people persons. They enjoy heading up committees. Yep, that's me. Participating in group learning and projects. Bam. And communicating with other students and adults. So they'll probably enjoy demonstrating their learning through speeches, through acting, or through a debate. So that's an interpersonal learner. I think that is definitely me. But those are also two other examples of learning styles and modalities. Cut the noise. Cut the noise. Cut the noise. If you're not tuning in to Kicking It with Key, then you are surely missing out. Key is a YouTuber, self-care enthusiast, an educator, hey, a queen of unboxing, and a lupus survivor. And Key is also one of my really good friends. Kicking It with Key focuses on sharing personal journeys to light the pathway for others through tips and hacks for everyday struggles. If you're interested in cutting the noise and living your very best life, tune in every other Sunday at 7 p.m. on YouTube. You can find Key on YouTube at Kiana Cole. Let me spell it out for you. KianaCole. You can also find Kicking It with Key on Instagram at KickingItWithKey_. I'm going to spell that out for you too. KICKINITWITHKI_. Join Key so you can also live your very best life.
So our next segment is called We Love the Kids. And I'm just going to tell y'all a little story about what basically happened last week. So last week was a very, very, very challenging week, I would say. Still adjusting to this whole new system of working from home. And every Wednesday, Linz knows that I have a class, and I normally start class around like 5. And generally speaking, I don't get out until like around 9, 9:30. Linz was here. I got out at like 10, 10:15. And basically, but last Wednesday, the most bizarre thing happened. And I think the majority of everyone should know that I'm out of the classroom right now. And so something happened to me that I was really excited about prior to, no, actually I was in the middle of class. And even that's better. That's the pleasure about it being via Zoom now is the fact that, I mean, but even if I was in the classroom, I still would do the same thing. I would oftentimes take calls because I got to see what's going on, especially when I was still teaching in the classroom. That was something I always had to do, is kind of be on call for different situations that would happen to my kids. But last Wednesday, I want to call my student, my gentle giant. He called me, and basically, I didn't know it was a 202 number. And for most of y'all, I still have my California number. So I was like, oh, 202, who's calling me from a 202 number? So I knew it was probably somebody who was one of my kids or a kid's parent, something like that. And he gets on the phone, he's like, Mr. Jihad. I was like, what's up, man? What's up? How are you? He was like, I'm good. And just to hear his voice, it showed me that I've had somewhat of a lasting impact. For him to be hitting me up in April at that time. And him to be thinking about me, like, it really did make my day. And it just really goes to show that, kind of like what we were talking about in the last episode, like the teacher joy and the teacher relationships, they truly do have a lasting impact. And that's why literally every second, every moment counts as an educator, as well as a parent. Like, you leave an impression on your students and you leave an impression on your child. So it's very important that the impression that you leave is something that is lasting.
Yep.
And because especially now of all times, I feel like tomorrow is like never promised. Mm-hmm. And so you have to really make sure that the person that you leave on this earth is really presented, really is carried out. And so for him to call me and to chat with me, he was talking about the fact that he really enjoys online learning. And which is, I don't know if that really is a good thing for him, honestly, because Lindsay and I both would catch him in the hallways just wandering around when we were both in the classroom at our first placement. But what you call it? It was just very, it felt good to hear his voice. And he was mentioning how I was talking to him about how he's an older brother now. And I was like, oh, like, have you been looking out for moms? Have you been taking care of your younger brother? And so say all that to say, it felt good to hear his voice and to kind of talk to him and see where he's at, how he's been handling like this whole coronavirus and be working from home, working remotely as a student. So this is the reason as to why we love the kids. Our concept development is inspired by a man named Dr. Brad Johnson, who's a motivational speaker who believes in servant leadership. Dr. Johnson is a big proponent of teacher advocacy, which brings us to our conversation. Today, we're going to use a couple of his tweets to talk about the importance of advocacy in education.
So, I'm going to start with the tweet that most resonated with me. I'm going to read it clearly. The irony of taking away recess for misbehavior is that if students have more recess, play, and physical activity, they would have improved focus on task behavior and able to self-regulate.
Wow.
Boo. But you're right.
Wow. You know, that's so ironic because I remember lots of like my peers when I was growing up getting recess taken away, as well as, or I can't speak from my teaching experience because they, generally speaking, they didn't take recess away when I was teaching.
Oh, yeah. I guess y'all did end up having recess.
Because we didn't have recess. But
yeah. You start with recess.
But, so yeah, that's very interesting, but I think that developmentally it makes sense. And even and I love that, Lindsay, did you plan like the reason as to why you did learning modalities for terminology time?
No, I didn't. But I'm just a natural baby.
Wow. Because it's real. Like the struggle is real out here for students who actually need to be able to, or not students, but kids developmentally need to be able to move their bodies every once in a while. Like it's not, even as adults, like
it's not,
after like 15 to 20 minutes of us being seated, we gotta move around.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. It's also weird here, like with middle schools, like they don't have recess times built in.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know we're talking about like taking away recess, but they don't even have recess time built in. When that's the time they're supposed to, like, developmentally, like, there's so much growth that's happening in middle schoolers that they need to be eating. Like, they need to be eating damn near every 30 minutes. Like, that's why they're hungry.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I don't know what classes you can eat in. And then you'll have, like, we have brunch and recess. So we have two different times within our schedule in middle school that we can have a break and high school.
Oh, yeah, that was fancy.
I went to school in the Palo Alto. Okay. But as an educator, it's like a, I don't know if it's double-edged sword or catch 22. Yeah, it's probably, it might be both of those, actually.
Whatever the case.
Because, no, I don't want to take away recess from you because you need to get your energy out. Like, you have to get it out. But sometimes the only thing I have to take away from you is recess.
Right.
And I have to take something away from you because positive reinforcement is really nice, but it does not always work with everybody. And so it's also hard when there's not enough discipline at home because if you have no discipline at home, I have to discipline you in all the ways that I can just to get you to listen. I can just say, I'm thinking about taking your recess away. Then kids can listen for a full hour.
Right.
Now you can give me an hour just because I said it.
Right.
Because I don't even really be taking recess like that anymore. They're fifth and sixth grade. I don't do it as much. But the other piece, too, is that parents be like, take their recess. They don't need to have recess. Oh, they did this at home, Ms. Black. They don't need to have any recess. And so it's like, it's just very, it's also very limiting when your school culture doesn't have like a consistent discipline system or a restorative system, any type of system.
Exactly. And I was going to go back to last week's episode around students have being a stakeholder in their education. Mm-hmm. And when a student values their education, this conversation looks completely different. And I think
it's
that
not even a conversation.
Right, exactly. I think that that's really what we, and just like you spoke to a school needing a discipline system, like there does need to be some type of system that's in place so that students are aware. But when there's no consistency, when a student knows like, oh, I can do whatever the hell I want and still get away with it.
They're going to do whatever they want.
That's exactly what they're going to do. But they also, when there's no value around, they don't see the value right now Mm-mm. in their education. And like what that means, like in the big picture, in the grand scheme of things. And so if that's not value, then why am I going to listen to what you got to say?
See, and then on the other side of that is like, I'll have kids who like, no, Ms. Black is okay. I can miss recess because I want to really hear what you're saying. I appreciate that so much.
Right.
But we have to go and I have to go.
Right.
Because I don't want to be in here either.
I literally
have a group of 12 kids and it's a lot. I'm like, seriously? But that's because like, they're really, really learning this year and they feel really, really engaged. So they want to keep going, but I'm like, we got to go.
That's good. Am I going to do the next one?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm about to put a 4-minute timer on it too, to make it a little more fun. So you can be concise.
Oh, let's try.
Challenge.
Let's do that. All right.
I'll say that. Put it on after you read it though.
Okay. Work leaders don't like strong followers, but strong leaders love strong followers because they understand that iron sharpens iron.
Time. Okay. That is a iron sharpens iron. I hear so many Black people say that all the time. But then again, I'm like, I'm not really around white people to hear them say it in large spaces. But I agree with that because I'm a leader, but I can be a strong follower for a leader that I trust. Right. Hmm. And I'm very inquisitive. I'm always challenging the status quo because I'm an advocate. Like, we cannot be advocates and be like, oh, I do everything for my kids if we're afraid to ask a question in a group setting because it might challenge the seemingly authoritative figure, because you give them the authority or you cannot give them the authority. But I currently work with people who I ask a question and they get all shook or they don't understand what I'm saying because they're so quickly trying to respond because they have this authoritative figure, like this mindset. So they're not even thinking, slowing down to answer my question. You're just spitting it off. Don't spit it off of me, honey, because I'm going to catch you.
Absolutely.
I'm going to catch you. We're going to get down to the bottom of it. Okay. But then I have, I currently have a principal who, no, I do not agree with everything that he does. But I tell him that I do not agree with most of the things. Some stuff I'm just like, okay, I don't have the energy to do it. But he understands me and he knows that I'm going to be that way. And he will come to me to ask me questions about stuff. If I ask questions, he'll be like, you know, I hear you, but we're going to go with this. Okay, cool. I could deal with that. But you're not, but like he's attempting to be a strong leader. Like he has certain values that may not be clear to everyone, but like he has certain values. And so he's not threatened by me. It's right. Like it's a system of collaboration.
Right. And it's so interesting because I feel like teacher identity is a big, it's important, right? Like teachers need to be very aware of who they are before they enter a school. And the reason why I say this is because if you are going to be teaching students, just like Lynn said, like you have to be able to advocate for students, advocate on behalf of students.
Yes.
And so you're not there to please your administrators. You're there to make sure that your students get everything that they need and everything that they deserve. Right. And so oftentimes teachers get into these spaces of these leadership meetings and these leadership positions and forget that these leaders, quote unquote, may not have had the same amount of experience as these teachers have, and these leaders oftentimes forget about the experience that they were having while they were in the classroom. And that's what I can't get with that. And so it's very challenging for me. And that's what I think about my experience. There were several times in which I had to go to the leaders and say, hey, you're throwing 50 students into one class or 50 students into two classrooms, but like, let's actually think about the IEP dynamics in each class so it can be an equitable experience as opposed to just overloading one class with
all the IEPs because there's Black women teachers, because that's what it is.
And it doesn't make sense. Or thinking about my most recent experience in which I had students of varying ability. Now that we kind of alluded to this, I want to say like the first or second episode, of students of varying abilities. And like, I had a nonverbal student, I had a student who was on autism spectrum, and it was two special education teachers. I had to go in, but it was like a total of 15 students in that classroom. And we were basically a self-contained model. And I had to go to sit down with my administration and say, hey, this is not, it's not legal. Let's just start with that. Like, we have students of all the different, like, self-contained, that it's not happening. You can't call this a resource room. This is not a resource room. This is a self-contained space. And so you have to be able to be that voice. And so the idea about iron sharpening iron, I completely agree. And I love it when educators go, I don't even want to say toe-to-toe, because I feel like that brings like a negative connotation to it. But it's just like, you need to stand on your beliefs as to what is right for your students.
You need, yes, you need to be open to, it's a debate. It's not really like, it's not really an argument, it's a debate. And people have to remember that I'm not attacking you as a person. And I'm not attacking you as the person who's in authority. I'm trying to challenge your idea.
Exactly.
And you have to be able to separate yourself from your idea.
Exactly.
For the kids.
It's for the kids, because we love the kids.
We do. All right, the next one.
We didn't stick to the timer, huh? We went over.
We were a little over, but it was, you know, it was okay. You know. We're doing better. It makes it fun, though, right?
Right.
I see you're really
going.
You're really animated. All right. Teachers, what is one thing your teacher prep program didn't prepare you for in being a teacher besides teaching online in a crisis? Look, I know he's trying to be funny, but I was like, that's hilarious. But also, like, I also have an answer for you.
Me too.
What's the first thing that comes to your head?
Oh, my goodness. I want to say patience is the first thing that I can truly just spit out. And what I mean by that is patience in the sense of like dealing with certain students' attitudes and not having like being able to authentically meet them where they're at, and understanding that this child is not saying this to, they're saying this, they're responding this way because they don't know how another way to respond. Mm-hmm. And trying to assume the best in that, as opposed to it being like, okay, like, I know that you just, like, you're testing me. You're trying me and trying to take it personally. Mm-hmm. I feel like that was one of the things that I don't feel like my ed prep program prepared me for.
See, but in saying that, because that's hard, because I don't think you can really learn that at the capacity in which we experienced that in our first year and at the school
that
we were at.
Really fair.
There's no prep. Nobody's going to prepare you for that, Jahad.
That's
like, I'm thinking about, I'm trying not to name student names, so I'm thinking about a lot of kids. And I'm just like, there was no way you were going to prepare for that. But I think what could have happened is there should be more child development or human development classes.
A lot.
Because I only had one. And like, now I'm like, oh, this would have been way more helpful. You would have had more patience. But there should be a course on, or like more general conversations around the knowledge of self. Because
teacher identity, yep. Mm-hmm.
Do I know that I have an ego and everyone else has an ego, and and my ego is what's making me think that I need to yell at this 8-year-old because they're doing this? Like,
yes.
Everybody projects their past lived experiences. So we can have an apple right here, and we all gonna see the apple different, because when we look at the apple, we all have a different story about an apple. And so you can't expect somebody to think the same exact way. But then you also have to couple that with their 8 years old.
Yeah.
You have to couple it with
that. That's very, very real. And I think that also thinking about understanding trauma. And I think that even going deeper with identity, I think that just like you were saying, I feel like I wish I would have had a much better understanding of myself prior to going into the classroom, because I think that you go into the classroom and you have all of these like, ooh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that.
Girl, you ain't gonna do all that.
And that's
you
what
don't
kind
have
of
time to do all that.
That's what kind of,
you don't have time.
That bubble has bursted very quickly.
Mm-hmm. What are some other things? I had one and I forgot. But work-life balance.
Woo!
Somebody should teach that.
My gosh.
Especially the teachers, because society tells, like, we're encouraged to work from home. Or it's like, oh, yeah, you guys have to work from home. Like, it's common knowledge at this point.
Yeah.
You have to work from home.
Absolutely. Like, when I said that I was taking calls from class, my second, third year of class, like, I'm serious. And I have to leave class to go deal with stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, that would happen.
Like, parent are, like, I'm just like, just wondering, like, is your boss, is it normal for your boss or anybody you work with to text you at 7:15 p.m. on a Friday to, and you weren't even in work, mind you.
Right.
To ask, hey, do you have a moment to chat? No, I don't have a moment to chat. And I'm ignoring your text message, mom. Why would you text me on Friday at 7:15?
Right.
That's crazy. That's fine if that's the time you were available. Right. But I've already told you my time that I'm available.
And you don't get with it.
No, and definitely not on a Friday, because right. then I'm also not going to text you back. I'm not. I'm not going to text you back the next day. If you did that Thursday night, I would text you back Friday morning. But now, no.
You're outside of the business hours.
You're
but you have to be
hours.
Able to define that as an educator. Like, that is something that I wish I would have known.
That's true.
Because I think that that's also not discussed. It's like trying to, if you have that identity going into the classroom, you would be so much of a better, or you, well, heck, I don't know if you would or wouldn't actually. I don't know if that truly would be like, oh, okay, like, is that the golden key?
What?
Would that truly change your trajectory of your whole education experience? No, I just think that you probably wouldn't be as burnt out as quick.
But that changes your whole trajectory.
That's true.
What are you talking
about? I'm more so saying that I think that you still eventually would burn out. I'm more so speaking from like the placement that I was at. As
yeah,
opposed,
you are. You are I'm projecting thinking, your past life yeah. experiences.
That's
I'm
what's
sitting
happening.
Here like.
No, yeah. Any other place, any normal place, I think I was just at an anomaly. That's really what it was.
You were at an anomaly. You definitely were at an anomaly.
Okay, let's hit this one. What I have always found perplexing in education is that decisions are usually prefaced as it's all about the students, yet teachers are rarely part of the decision making. The very ones who are actually in the classroom with the students and know what their kids need most.
Yeah, I hate when people say that. I don't hate when people say that. I hate when people weaponize it. Like, it's all about the students. Girl, me driving, spending my gas money to drive to one of the six campuses every 2 weeks to meet up with the other teachers, which we could do virtually because we've been doing it virtually, is not all about the students. It's not. Because even when I say, like, hey, I know we're supposed to drive all the way out to our Brightwood campus, but our Brightwood teacher isn't attending our PLC. So can we just meet at this campus? And they're like, well, no, we want you to meet at the Brightwood. I mean, we ended up meeting at the campus we wanted to anyway. But we wanted to have everybody at the Brightwood campus. That's not rooted in the kids. But
no,
everything
sorry.
We're doing is supposed to be rooted in the kids. So it's like, y'all say it when it's convenient. And ma'am, you don't know my kids. You haven't taken the time to know them. You haven't even asked me about them. So you can't tell me that you're doing something for my kids. Because it's almost like an oxymoron for you to say that we're doing this for the kids, but you don't know my kids, right? And then in the next PD, you're talking about how you need to make connections with your kids. You want me to go on home visits to make connections with my kids. Yeah, I can do stuff for my kids, and
right.
I can say that.
Exactly.
But then you're saying this is for the kids?
That doesn't make any sense.
And you didn't ask my opinion, and I'm telling you it's not working, and you're still like, oh, it's going to work, okay. But I told you it's not going to work.
He said, that's what I said for
job. It's not going to work.
And I think a lot of that is happening right now, right? And I think that both these kind of like tying together, especially right now. I feel like there are a lot of people that are making decisions that actually aren't leaning in to hear like what teachers have to say about what's going on. And I think that if they were to just start with teachers and hear like, and I think that had they just taken a pause, like pause and
that's
think.
That's it. That's the pause.
Think. Like y'all just trying to respond and just like you said earlier, you're just trying to respond and you've never prepared for anything like this. And more importantly, you never listen to teachers. You never lean into actually hear the people who teach the kids. That doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't. He also had another tweet about something about there are schools or principals thinking about taking away, like having summer school, like full on summer school.
Yes.
And it's like, for multiple reasons, it's not a sound decision. But to go back to your point, y'all need to take a pause. We are rapidly learning, but we need to be planning together with the pause. That's what teachers do over the summer. They're planning.
Lens, what do you mean? They don't get just like a free summer to
we don't
just
get a free summer? No, y'all sound foolish.
And take a vacation?
With people, and we'll talk about this further, but just so people know that we're technically 10-month employees. That's what my contract says. But my financial office spaces out my check so that I get my 10-month, I'm getting only paid for 10 months. that they're spacing it out so I get my checks over the course of the 12 months.
Right.
Now, I don't know about, there are other systems where people just get paid for the 10 months.
Right.
So when people are like, oh, you have summers off. Like, no, I'm getting, I work, I'm a 10 month employee, y'all. Like, if that's what you're forgetting or you're not thinking about, but that's why we're here.
this is exactly why we're here.
That's exactly why we're here.
This is it.
Do you have any other thing? Let me see it again. Okay, hold on, because I might have another point.
Refresh that memory.
No, I said it already. I ain't going to beat a dead horse, okay? My next tweet is, and I think we could spend like, well, we probably should still say 4 minutes because it'll turn into 5 or 6. this is a big one too.
Yes.
With no standard test or evals, local districts and teachers have more autonomy than in decades. This should be the model going forward. This alone would dramatically improve teacher and admin attrition, morale, and student achievement. I chose this one because all this is unprecedented, right? Hmm. Like, y'all said we need a standardized test. We don't have them, right? Y'all said we needed teacher evaluations. We don't have them. Please look at how things are still functioning. Like, no, this is not ideal.
Right.
But we don't have standardized tests or evaluations. You guys weren't just like, okay, we're done. Like, but, and I want people to really understand how often the evaluations and standardized tests are talked about. Hmm. Like, even just think about Jasmine, Old Town Road teacher, and her kids are experiencing test anxiety. They're in third grade.
Hmm.
Because the test is being talked about so much. And like, think about how uplifting it would be if we just uplifted these assessments. Now, I'm not saying that like the purpose of the assessments was to ensure that everybody's learning the same thing.
Exactly.
But because we have plenty of data and plenty of peer-reviewed journals that states that the standardized testings have a real negative impact on a student, now's the time to adjust because we don't have them.
Right.
We don't have them.
I just don't understand why for kids, things can't be fun. Why are third graders experiencing test anxiety? Why can't it, let's get back to that like modalities conversation. Like, why can't a test for a third grader be something that has to do with movement? Something like, yeah. I don't know. It's just like, but the thing is that the reason as to why it's not that way is because that takes thought. It takes a lot more planning. That takes a lot more critical thinking and a lot more meetings. And yes, it does. But
yeah,
who cares? Like, that's the expectation. Is the expectation. And right now you're just appeasing people in more affluent communities who can tutor, have more tutors to help meet the quote unquote standard.
Mm-hmm.
When what is the actual standard? It's subjective anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's actually meet our kids where they are actually at. And they're not at the level of just sitting down with a pencil and a paper and bubbling in on a Scantron. Like, that does not make sense to me. Or clicking on a computer. Like, that does not make sense to me.
No.
Like, we can be doing things that are a lot more intentional that actually are able to assess a student's cognitive ability.
Mm-hmm. I'm also, like, in my head right now trying to make the connection between like the real world and standardized assessments, like the actual action, because like what you're saying is like we can still test to make sure that I learn, but like what would that look like? And then when you said like we could have them move around and test, I was immediately like, yeah, we could, but like some teachers wouldn't know how to assess with that. But then you immediately said that would take more planning. You're right. It would just take more planning and more effort into teacher preparation. Like nothing, none of it is impossible. It's just, we would have to change the structure. And
but
that's
the thing
take time.
Is, but that the other issue is that I don't feel like in every teacher preparation program there, you're getting taught how to create a rubric.
You're not.
And more importantly, especially at like a lot of these, like, I'm just going to call it out. Like I haven't really seen different, I know that I was at Hopkins, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and I felt like my program was comparable to an online, like a DeVry type mm-hmm. of like for-profit type of mm-hmm. educational experience. And what I'm saying is that because of that, because I was in this like cookie cutter mold, mm-hmm. I don't feel like I learned anything. But now I went to Howard and I've, there have been lots of things that I have learned through this experience, but they get the students that I'm serving. And that's mm-hmm. like the first battle, right?
Yeah.
And if more schools were to do that, I'm just curious to know like where we would be as far as teacher preparation mm-hmm. and how that then can connect to like the bigger picture of assessments. I think it all starts at like the university level. I feel like we're not doing a good job there either. But at the end of the day, I feel like students can be assessed still. It just needs to be in a completely different way. I don't feel like we should just all be happy. And then, getting back to what you were saying also about the fact in the real world, you don't really have to take assessments like that. Like an assessment is you being able to throw that event. An assessment is you being able to send X amount of emails. An assessment is you doing what I did, which is having interviews on a daily basis and being able to type up that manuscript to make sure that your supervisor knows what the candidate's highs and lows were. You're not doing a test. You're not doing it. Like that does not happen. Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, like are there certain professions? Absolutely. But
Right. We're not taken away from certain professions because I don't even know all the professions and what the criteria is and how consistent you have to redo things. Like I do know like with teachers, you do have to take an assessment mm-hmm. to be a teacher. You do have to reapply for your certification. I don't even know what that entails. But then I'm also thinking about like evaluations. I guess that's mostly teachers. I just feel like there's less room for negotiation
mm-hmm.
when you're a teacher and you're getting an evaluation than when, well, I've never worked in corporate America or any other place, but from when I hear my friends, they're like, oh, my evaluation's coming up. I'm preparing a speech on why I should get paid more. And I'm just like, that's not how our evaluations work.
No, not at all.
It should be. Like, we're just trying to get to the point where we can argue you down about why you gave me a 3 and I think I deserve a 4. Like, exactly. We're not even at that point.
Right.
In our, first of all, we don't even have a set evaluation for all schools.
Hmm.
We don't even have a set evaluation. And even my we use a Danielson rubric in my charter school. And there's 6 schools, but each principal got to choose which strands they were going to evaluate teachers on. So there's just like no consistency. Like autonomy is cool, but why people get autonomy over how they evaluate us, but I don't get autonomy over like how I get to be evaluated, when I get to be evaluated, if I can negotiate with you or not.
That don't make sense, right?
No, it doesn't make sense. So at this point, I just think that we can get rid of the evaluations because there's no way you can appropriately evaluate me. But you also should listen to me and take heed to what I'm saying when I'm advocating for myself and a higher pay because of the quality of instruction that I produce.
Right.
That's what I believe. But I'm also tired of proving myself to an entity that I've been a part of for multiple years. Why is it that I have people that can vouch for me at my school and I have people that can vouch for me in my central office, like literally right there across from you. But when I'm trying to reach out and negotiate, you're like, oh, we're not taking calls. We can negotiate via email. Who's negotiating via email? Email? Like not even call, email. Like, and I'm saying this because this is my truth and this is what has been told to me before. And I even said, like, my reply was like, you know, email seems very transactional. Like, I just want to, like, have a conversation and a discussion. But that wasn't an option. And I'm just like, I just feel like negotiations, although I don't believe that enough people negotiate. And there's facts that show, data that proves that women do not negotiate enough.
Right.
But it's, like, in the culture to negotiate.
Yeah. Because I even think about like my negotiating experience and it, I'm the type of person that if there is something wrong with my order, I'm going to figure it out. I want to know the reason as to why. I want to know the rationale. And so like, I really wish that I would have applied that same mindset to my first 3 years of working because had I done that, I think that they would have perceived me completely different, which would have probably worked to my advantage. But I don't know. I feel like education is like actually one of the only spaces where I feel like we don't get what we deserve. And
yeah,
more often than not, it's probably because we haven't advocated enough. Or I don't know. Like, I don't know if we just don't see it or like what it is.
It's not valued. It's not revered. Yeah. It's not respected.
And that's very true.
It's kind of like it's just taken for granted. But the other thing too is like everybody knows,
right?
It's not valued. Like, right.
Which is why everybody's tweeting about it right now.
People that are trying to shoot their shot at me in the club, and I tell them I'm a teacher, is like, wow, that's crazy. Parents, oh my god, you guys should be paid more. Friends, it's just like, yeah, we get it,
right?
Ooh, well, that closes out our concept development. A weird spot to end with, but. Thank you for listening to us.
Happy Teacher Appreciation Week.
Happy Teacher Appreciation Week. By the time this episode drops, Teacher Appreciation Week will have just passed. Woohoo!
Yes.
However, it's not too late to show your appreciation to a teacher. So with this call to action, we're going to just suggest a few ways that you can still show your favorite teacher some love. First and foremost, send a teacher a kind and thoughtful message. You'd be surprised how not often we get those, but we love some good, intentional, and heartwarming words.
Second, monetary donations are always a nice touch. Ask them for their Cash App, PayPal, Google Wallet, whatever. Or maybe this particular teacher has an Amazon wish list you could check out. Wink, wink.
And our last and final suggestion for Teacher Appreciation Week is gifts, okay? Gifts are always nice. An e-gift card, now that's really sweet. Care packages sent to their homes. You can get really creative with this one.
And if you're wondering how to support your favorite educators here on the Reformers Pipeline, then you can show some love by subscribing to our podcast. Rate us on Apple Podcasts or simply tell a friend about us. Words of mouth is truly key, and which will go a long, long way.
With that being said, be sure to follow us on our Instagram pages at Hottie Hod or at MamaLens22. Continue to check on your friends and family, and don't forget to truly sit and check on yourself too, y'all.
Yes, and peace, love, and light.
Hootie hoo!